Support for Technology and Innovation Reporting comes from SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com. Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland. We're going to spend some time talking about TED Talks. We're going to talk about connecting people. We're going to talk about conversations. And here to start us off on this conversation is Thad Geeds. And you hold the TED Talk TEDx license in Sioux Falls, you do so much more. So let's just take a step back and let's talk about creating that community and creating that conversation.
Great. Yeah. So I love events and but events with meaning and purpose and value and gathering people for common values or beliefs. So this was definitely one of those events. We had a stage of speakers, 10 or 9 talks, 10 speakers that really had some terrific messages to share. And we got to use the TED platform and dressed everything up, and it was a big kind of spectacle. And then the video capture we have from last night's event is going to be uploaded to TED here in the next 3 to 5 days.
So it goes on to a website, and then it's just out there for anyone and everyone.
YouTube channels first, and then TED can kind of, if it gets enough traction or interest or kind of viralness, they'll feature in different ways too.
Viralness.
Did I invent
that?
It's
a word. Did I make it up?
Okay.
I mean, it might as well be.
Okay. So let's just talk a little bit about the process and what it takes. How you find the speakers, what are you looking for, and, the stage presence.
Yeah. So I applied for the license, I think, 9 months ago and had to go through their approval process. Wasn't anything too strict, but they asked me some questions and reviewed it and said, all right, you're now the license holder. Congratulations. And now you have to conduct.
Does it cost money to be a license holder?
No.
They just give them
away. It's a complete nonprofit endeavor. I can't make money. None of the speakers can make money. None of the organizers can make any money. It's nonprofit. All the sponsorship and ticket sales go back into the event and the production and promotion material and everything in that area. But yeah, got the license, and then they said, here's the platform, here's the premise. Find speakers either right here in your region or community or maybe a little outside. So we kind of nudged a few people in the network to apply, but then we had an open application too, and 91 people submitted applications. Yeah, 91, yeah.
And do you have to have a theme or a mission with your TED Talk?
This one was standard, which means it could be a diversity of different, and that's what we had last night. It was a pretty big diversity. So you can choose a silo topic theme would be maybe healthcare or agriculture or maybe technology innovation, but we did a kind of standard just mix of diversity, which I think was terrific.
Okay, so talk a little bit about some of the speakers that you had.
All right, well, in the studio here is Mr. Vani Harari and Sarah Ray Werner. Vani talked about his kind of long ambition of his work of leadership training and leadership development, but your talk was Leadership Drought is the title.
Yeah.
And then Sarah had your element of not being able to help everyone, having a huge servant heart, mm-hmm. but not being able to help every single person that comes through your path. So her lifelong journey of finding her niche of helping people, which is a magnificent talk as well. Do you want to talk to me to talk about any of the others?
Go ahead and talk about some of the others, and then we're gonna go deeper with these here.
Hugh Weber talked about community design, community development. Laura Ray Chandler talked about African-American history in the Dakotas, which is super informative. We had Jeff Gould talk about what he's learned, how he learned to live after officiating 400-plus funerals, which, man, that was an inspirational one. The Birdalls, John Birdall of Advanced Thompson Vision, his dad, did a duo talk on achieving immortality, which was the power of organ donation that lives on in additional mm-hmm. people's lives. Because he performed cornea surgery on his dad from a donor. So it was, remarkable stories. Any others to highlight? Rebecca Wiener-McGregor talked about overcoming fear. Todd Novak talked about his experience with onboarding freshmen at Washington High School and how they use marbles on a table. You'll have to watch it. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it in this amount of time. So, man, they were spectacular.
And then baby names.
Eleanor Turner, yep.
Baby name, that was super interesting, mm-hmm. thinking about what names mean and all that.
She's the author of 20 baby naming books. Yeah, so her title was How to Not Name a Baby, which is not often talked about, but it's a super impactful thing. You know, the name you embrace. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you pass down to your loving child. So, yeah. Huh. Did we get them all?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. And good turnout, good, I mean, yep. It was yesterday and we're talking about it today.
We sold out actually when we announced 2 months ago in 5 hours. So we had people messaging me the last month, tickets available yet, tickets available. But one thing maybe some listeners don't know, Ted, as a first time organizer, you like level up as you grow as a TEDx organizer. So as a first timer, I could only have 100 ticket sales. So they give me like the first parameter kind of starting point with TEDx. So now
we
can
level
up. Is
that so you become successful, that there's that need to get in?
I hope so, yeah. But they're really intelligent. I mean, they're a super just knowledgeable organization. So they know what they're doing. So they kind of give me a leash with this first time. And now they'll review it, check all the footage. And then I have to do some additional things to level up as well.
Okay, so this is to get it posted and labeled as a TEDx, right?
Yep.
Is that
yep? And we
really
should have
you have to follow these rules.
Yep. They have their rules and guidelines.
Because there's a standard.
There certainly is, yeah.
So talk about the need in South Dakota in Sioux Falls about having this kind of conversation.
Yeah. So I think Ted's premise that is you have like a world-renowned journey or study, or think of like Jane Goodall's and the Tony Robbins of the world. Like they've been doing this for 20 years, but then instead of giving like a lecture for 2 hours an hour, it's like you have 18 minutes max to refine this message. And it's usually only one thought or one idea you want to portray to the audience and then to the world. So to take that type of challenge and put it on the stage and have a super receptive audience, and then that it can potentially be lined up with the Simon Sinek's, you know, the Malcolm Gladwell's of the world, and all the other characters of the TED name and brand, I think is spectacular.
And then would they use it on their TED Talk radio, the speeches? Is that a different beast?
I don't know. We'll have to dive into that world as we get into it. We just got done conducting events. And now, yeah, when the videos come public here in the next 7 days, that's when we'll do a huge new blitz to see which ones can take off.
Okay, so Vonnie, you talk about your process and how you were selected to be one of the speakers.
Yeah, so I was a little bit closer to the process. Thad and I and others, we had talked about this for some time. And the license was in limbo for a period of time where no one really kind of knew who possessed it. And thank goodness Thad had the gumption to go out there and hunt it down. So I was a little bit closer to the process that way. And for me, my speak was about leadership, our kind of the epidemic that we're facing and the lack of leadership that we have, and also the manner in which we're developing our leaders. And so that's something that I deal with quite a bit with my business, Think3D. We do leadership development training, organizational culture consulting. So that's something that was really big for us. Normally for me, in terms of my process of doing any type of speak, because I probably have some of the most public speaking experience out of the group that we had. But I'm normally a person where a day before, 2 days before, whatever, I kind of do the thing. I'm kind of
very
a
true
free-flowing person.
You had to plan ahead.
So I had to plan ahead. Okay. So I had to have a little bit more of a process, you know, when you're thinking.
Refine the message.
Yeah. Okay. So getting it down under, and I was under time, for the record, I would like people to know. But to refine it down into that particular time, to get it to where you have a little bit more of a open, a body, an end type of thing, was different. And also you're playing to two audiences, right? You're playing to the audience that is physically there, and you're playing to the audience in the camera. So it changes the dynamic of what you do, you know, mm-hmm. where as for me, normally I might do things that are a little bit more experiential. I might engage the interactive and engage the audience a little bit more. That's a little bit different because, you know, the viewers at home can't experience that. And so having to consider all those different type of elements was interesting, but it was fun. And it was a great exercise to kind of stretch some different parts of the brain.
Yeah.
Okay, and Sarah Warner is here as well, and you're a professional podcaster, so this had to be easy peasy for you, right?
It's interesting that you say that because there's so many challenges. So I do a lot of speaking as well, but I never speak close to home in South Dakota. And so for me, the challenge was having people see my face while I'm speaking and being vulnerable in that way, and then doing it in my hometown, which for whatever reason, it's easier to speak nationally. Or at least it is for me than it is to speak here at home, because this is my family. These are my people. This is my tribe. And I know that I represent them when I travel anywhere as well. And so I want to let them know, like, hey, I'm not slandering your name. I'm one of you. So it was such a unique challenge. But I do love speaking in any capacity. So it was a fabulous event. It was a great time, and it was a great way to continue to put Sioux Falls on the map.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Vonnie, let's go back and let's talk about developing leaders.
Yeah.
What's your message? What's your takeaway of what we need to do?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, the general concept is just kind of where we're at in the world, and kind of how I started to speak out was just talking about when I was younger, being in Sunday school, and we were learning a lesson of Cain and Abel, and we were talking about how Cain eventually slew Abel with a rock. And one of the people in our class asked, why would God make a weapon? And somebody else said, God didn't make a weapon. A rock is not a weapon. And so we asked our Sunday school teacher, is a rock a weapon? And I remember her replying, it depends on who's holding the rock, right? And the world that we have in right now, your Googles, your Amazons, to your local businesses, all these institutions, media, government, whatever, we tend to put our frustration to corporations, governments, media, but all of those things are neutral. Their conscience, their deeds, their contributions, all of those things are determined by their leadership. If they have righteous leadership, they'll have righteous actions, right? And so the question becomes, how do we create leaders on scale? How do we create quality leaders that are not just managers, right? And we teach people management skills, but not necessarily leadership skills. Those things are more subjective. Those things are harder to teach. They take more time to teach. And those are things like compassion and empathy and understanding. Specifically, what I went through yesterday was the ability to be able to make a case, to be able to gain agreement, to give people values as to why they should do a particular thing, to teach courage, the courage to speak, the courage to act, the courage to lead, teach people how to inspire and how to draw from belief. Those are things that we don't teach in any type of specific space.
So, yeah, and then I liked how you phrased it too, that we're handing over, or we're seeing the biggest transfer of power and leadership in what you call the history of Earth, with the baby boomer generation now retiring and handing over to the next generations.
Right.
So I think it's super impactful at the timing of it too.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the thought process is just to say that there are going to be a lot of rocks laying around. Mm-hmm. We should be considerate about the investment that we're making and how we're managing and training the people who are going to be holding them. Right. And that's really what we're talking about. There's never been this much personally held wealth in the world. There's never been this much just concentrated influence or power. You can go back to the history of the world. There was never, again, a Google or Amazon or anything like that where you can literally control things that are happening in multiple countries, global presences. That's never happened before. And so now that people have the ability to do this, the type of abilities that can affect many, many, many people's lives for better or for worse, it's really important that the people who are holding these tools are righteous and have the skills to be able to do it.
But how do you teach that?
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of people think that leadership is something that you're born with. But the truth is, anything that you could do, you could do better. Anything that you could do better, you could do well. Anything that you could do well is a skill. And so all of these things, like, for instance, you know, a key component to leadership is listening, right? You can listen better. But the big thing is just we can teach them if we think differently about it, right? So when we think about, when you go to school and we talk about communication, what people think that is speaking and writing. And so we teach speaking and we teach writing and then we send you on your way. But really when we're talking about communication, we're talking about body language, we're talking about tone, we're talking about the process of thinking empathetically and thinking about the end user. Who are the affected parties? What are they going to get out of this? How are they going to be made to feel? And it's really a matter of thinking. It's not so much a process as it is a thought process. And so when you give people that idea to think three-dimensionally, right, when they're considering the parties that are involved, the future benefit or cost, And then what it does for people, it allows people to get into a space where they're naturally going to be more engaged. They're naturally going to be more considerate. They're naturally going to be more empathetic. And so those things you can absolutely teach. How to make a case, how to be persuasive. Well, one of the biggest things about being persuasive is being able to identify what you get out of it and what's important to you and what your value set is and what you find beneficial, right? Because I just need to be able to provide a value, and the value is in what you value. And so these are things that are that absolutely can be taught, but they just take time. And oftentimes we don't allow that space and time.
Do you feel that young people really know why they believe what they believe?
No, but that's how I know that they believe it, right? Is these things are, they're super passionate about it. It could cost them a job. It could cost them money. It could cost them position. But they still believe it, right? So that lets you know that it's valuable. Making the connections to why that's important to them, something that goes beyond just being intuitive, something that you just feel, that's where you need wisdom and experience to help you draw those type of connections. When you're young, you know right from wrong because it doesn't feel right, right? We have that discernment. But what we don't have is the experience to understand how it applies to the world that we live in, right? We know that this person shouldn't be treated like that, but we don't know how it works in the place of business, right? We don't know how it works in the place of education. It's these trappings that we've created that we have to teach people to navigate. You intuitively know how to treat each other, right? We intuitively know how to love each other and care for each other. We just don't know how to do it while we're making money.
Social media have an impact?
For sure. And it's a tool, really. A lot of times, you know, industries are struggling, fighting against, you know, social media, right? They can't keep people off their phones. They can't keep people engaged in various ways. But one of the things that they never really acknowledge is that the workplace and a lot of those environments don't duplicate any of the things that social media provides young people. Let's think about what it provides. It provides them access and exposure, right? It gives them the opportunity to be in the know. They always have something that's asking them what their opinion is. What are you doing? What do you think about this? How do you feel about this? Do you like it? Right? Do you love it? Right? There's always something engaging them that way, and they get to connect and they get that social aspect. Now, put that in normal work environments, mm-hmm. and you don't have a lot of aspect. We want you to, or a lot of aspects to reach out. We want you to stay in your cubicle, right? We only want you to talk on people on your 15-minute break, and then hopefully you don't have to use the bathroom because you won't have much time after that, right? We're not really asking your opinion. We're not really engaging you in those type of things. And so that's why you can't compete with it, because you're not competing with it, right? So social media plays a really big part in it. Not only what you can do as a tool to access and connect with people, but also how you can replicate those experiences, those things that call out to young people that they normally don't have, that young people in history normally have not had. You know, it was get up and go do what I told you to do.
Do you feel that young people want to just start as the leader?
No, I think they're absolutely willing to follow. I think young people are absolutely willing to follow. Any good leader is willing to follow. They just need somebody that's worthy of following. And that's what people get confused. There's a big difference between somebody not being willing to work and someone not being willing to work for you. There's a different thing. And a lot of times people will never explore that part of it. Am I doing something that is keeping people from being willing to follow me? Young people absolutely will follow. They do it all the time. So many amazing movements that are happening in the world right now are happening with young. That's always been the case. What has been difficult is connecting young people to the establishment vision, because normally it doesn't move fast enough for them. Normally it's not inclusive enough for them. And that was the case in Vietnam. That was the case, you know, in the 20s, women's suffrage. That was the case in civil rights. That was the case in everything. There's affected parties that are not being engaged. And so they just need worthy leadership, and they'll follow.
Okay. And Sarah, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Vani and Thad and Sarah, and focus in about helping people and not being able to do it all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. You're listening to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland. We'll be right back. We're back. This is Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me in the studio is Thad Geed and Vani Hariri and Sarah Werner, and we're talking about last night's TEDx event in Sioux Falls, and it was going to be posted on...
The captured video?
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be... It depends, because we have to...
Soon.
Pinnacle Productions did the video filming capture, so they have to segment it, piece it together, and then they're going to send it to Ted, and Ted takes a day to 3 days to review. So hopefully within 7 days. It could be four, it could be seven.
Okay, but you can find it online with TEDx, right?
Yep.
Okay, so Sarah Werner is here. So give me a little summary of what you talked about last night.
Yeah, so I think probably like most speakers, I went through many, many, many iterations of the talk. It started out being something completely different than it ended up being, and maybe that's okay. Maybe I gave the talk I needed to give, and I hope that that's what happened. But I started chasing the question of what happens when you can't help everyone? And obviously, that's a pipe dream, that's magical thinking, that's an impossibility, which is part of why it's so intriguing. But also it is something that could be maybe a little bit naive. And so you need to break it down and say, who am I capable of helping? And really, for me, what it came down to was a sense of identity. And who are we? Who have we created ourselves to be? Who do we think we are that we can help people? What does it mean to be worthy of helping others? What does it mean to have a servant mindset and to be a servant leader? And so really it boiled down to all of these sort of, I call them my incorrect assumptions, my incorrect equations about what it means to relate in your mind your identity with being a servant, what it means to go out into the world and say, hey, I am here to serve you. Does that mean I'm less than you? Does that mean I'm less worthy of you? Does it mean I'm less human? Does it mean that I need to give all of myself, some of myself? What does that look like? And then when you're giving yourself away like that, how do you not get into a place where you are in self-harm, where you are overcoming your own limits in a way that's not healthy? And so that's really what the talk ended up being, is how do we serve in a healthy, joyful way? How do we make the world a better place without losing ourselves?
And how do you answer that question?
That is part of the journey. That is something that I've been working on probably for the last, well, for my whole life. I grew up in the church. My dad was a pastor. And so this is something you struggle with even as a child, because you're kind of behind the scenes. And I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but being behind the scenes in a nonprofit or in a service organization, you can see that not everybody is always serving in a healthy way. And so I became kind of obsessed with that and didn't even realize until, I want to say just a few years ago, that I had fallen into that unhealthy cycle too. And I think a lot of women fall into that. I think a lot of people don't question the potential harmfulness behind good deeds that they're doing. And they don't question maybe, should I even be doing this? Is this healthy for me? I feel like I got away from your question completely.
I think your talk was like about your self-discovery on how you have found yourself now serving a huge audience of people. But you went through, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years of mission trips, serving the church. What did you say? A gospel choir?
Yeah. And I taught music. Like, I have no business teaching music.
But it's like somewhere in the inside you knew, like, this isn't how I can help, but at my best quality and with the most people.
Exactly.
So it was like everyone has that. I think everyone has that self-discovery of how do I best serve the community, my loved ones, the people around me. And that's why I really appreciate about yours was like,
thank you.
Oh yeah, you found your silo of how you serve. So
yeah. But what does unhealthy service really look like?
I think that's really the question, is how do we know it's unhealthy when it's the standard that's been set for us? Mm. So being behind the scenes, I saw people serving. I saw single mothers who were like, oh, I'm so exhausted, but I have to make this church event. I have to do this. I'm so exhausted. But this is for a good cause, and I need to be doing this, right? So I gave an example of going on a mission trip that I was completely unqualified physically to do. It was a construction trip. And I gave the example of not physically being able to lift the rocks I needed to lift to be a worthy and helpful member of my construction team. And it's like, why am I here? I mean, am I here just to suffer? And like, what does that mean? And what is the exchange of suffering and service? And who is it really about? I had so many questions that I wanted to explore. And last night's talk was just really a great place to do that. And hopefully bring some awareness to what we're doing to ourselves. If we're pushing ourselves past limits in a way that's good, because that's where innovation comes from, I think, a lot of the time, is when we push against those limits. But what happens when we hurt ourselves doing that, and what's the value of that pain?
And so what does healthy service look like?
Healthy service is, and this is something that I'm still working on. It's kind of a half-baked idea, but instead of exchanging pain for benefit, I like to think of it as exchanging benefit for benefit so that both parties can learn and grow and find joy and fulfillment in what they're doing. There's a healthy way, I think, to sacrifice and a joyful way to do it.
So do you think when people take servant trips to other countries that they're prepared really for being a servant?
I think it depends on their prior notions of what servanthood looks like. For me, it was how much pain can I experience physically, emotionally, spiritually? How can I go and just wreck myself and gain a little bit of perspective? You know, there's part of it you want to see how other people live their lives and be a part of that. I don't want to say like conversation of suffering because that just sounds like the worst thing ever. But just experience how other people live. There's definite value in that. As far as preparing people to go on something like that, that's maybe part of the point of a trip for sort of privileged Midwestern people to go to a place that's not privileged or Midwestern. So I think there's a little bit, and this is part of what troubles me, because I think that part of the value is the shock value. And I don't know if I like that. I don't know if that's good. And so I like that you ask about preparing for it, and I'm not 100% sure what that would look like.
As I was thinking about both of your topics, you almost need to serve or teach your children how to serve as a way to be a good leader. Am I reading too much into how they're intertwined?
Experience with it. Yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, the thing that people are talking about right now, which is servant leadership, is the ability to be able to lead without power, mm-hmm. right? And how do you do that, right? So many people have come up in a carrot and stick environment. You know, do what I say, not as I do, because I said so. Yada yada yada. That they've never actually developed skills to be able to have that. Again, going back to communication, when you're a child, right? When you communicate, how do you communicate, right? You're the parent. I mean, you're the child. There's a parent. Normally one way, and it's normally a directive. You go to school. You're the student. There's a teacher. It's normally one way and a directive. You go to work. You're an employee. Somebody's the boss. It's normally one way or a directive. There's very rarely that you even learn and develop those skills. So normally when you are communicating on the same plane as with a peer. But guess what? Those friends are normally experiencing the same things. They normally have the same level of maturity. They normally have, you know, some of the same experiences or come from this. So you don't learn as much when you're talking to friends. And that's usually the only time where you're talking to someone on par, right? And so people don't develop those skills of being able to do that. So when you teach people some of those things, when you teach them how to be a servant leader, to say that I can teach more by being an example, I can teach more by getting in here with you and doing it with you. I can teach more by showing you grace, by showing you understanding. And those type of things are really what draw people to you and make people willing to follow you without having to use the tool of money, without having to use the tool of power or position.
And I think that's really the key to it, yeah.
Well, and the people that I've known who have taken servant trips come back changed, come back wanting to be a different kind of servant. Was that part of your journey too?
Oh, that's such an interesting
question.
Well, you
went 3 times.
I did.
So it was a rewarding experience. I have a graphic hung up on my wall that's a Picasso quote. It says, the meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away. Mm. So it's like everyone has to find their gift to the world. And you haven't talked about your podcasting, you know, gifts that you have, and you're a writer and a storyteller, but you found yours through podcasting, and then people now use you as an authority, as that as a guidance to better writing and better publication. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Gosh, you're so kind.
Yeah. But and, yeah, I love that Picasso quote.
Well, it's true.
Find your gift. Find your gift, and the purpose is to give it away.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you give away? And that's something that I think that a lot of times when you go on, especially a short-term mission trip, so something that's a week or 10 days, And Thad's right. I did do it three times because of a lot of different reasons. Because while you're there, you're doing so many things. You're forming relationships with the people who are there, which I think is probably one of the most valuable things you could do. And that's why I went back. I also went back to see, hey, maybe this time I can lift those rocks, or maybe this time I can do this. And just every time it was like, yeah, no, Sarah, you have no upper
your
body strength.
Your gift is not building
exactly. So, and I think a lot of times it sounds weirdly selfish or narcissistic, but I think that a lot of times, since you can't go and make lasting change during a very short missions trip, what you're doing is developing yourself or discovering a lot about yourself. And that's why people do come back changed. It's because they've realized something about themselves. Oh gosh.
And not I have so much what
yeah,
they did,
exactly,
but who they want to be.
Exactly. And who the work that they've done has shown them who they can be and who they are and what that gap looks like. You do learn a lot about leadership on those trips. I led one of the trips, which was an adventure. It was a good time, and just very challenging in a unique way. But I think what you learn there and what you bring back can have a very powerful impact on your life if you're willing to sort of walk alongside it and maybe not just accept the easy answer like, oh, some people have it hard in other places. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of things you can learn that can help prepare you to be a better leader as well.
Right.
It's looking in the mirror and being honest, yes?
Right. Well, yeah. Those things are powerful given their time. To her earlier point, they end up being jarring, mm-hmm. right? And almost need to be jarring because of this short time frame, right? In the best case scenario, you would spend a longer period of time. So you got to understand how people actually lived, mm-hmm. how they woke up, what they did, what happens, how they manage conflict, how do they heal, how do they do those type of things versus going building the thing with them and, you know, having some food with them, whatever, right? That's great. But in that time, it kind of sometimes needs to be jarring to let people know that there's super divergent experiences out there and that their life is a little bit different. But one of the things that people do that we make the mistake of, particularly in the Midwest, because we're so proud of our work ethic, which we should be. But humility and work ethic is a part of our brand, and people fight for it sometimes. And we even have to challenge people similar to her experience to say, it can't just be about hard work. Mm-hmm. And the problem with just using that phrase hard work is that it makes people operate in a space where it's not work till it's hard. And so people have to find a suck in whatever it is that they do instead of having a situation where I love doing this, I'm working. But this is not hard work because I enjoy it. I love it. I engage with it. And so now when a boss walks by, people have to clickety-clack and look all stressed out to look like they're working. They can't be smiling. They can't be laughing because how can you be working if you're enjoying yourself? And that's just ridiculous. And that's the thing that we have to change, that you can learn and it doesn't have to be hard or laborsome.
Oh, I love that. That's
and that's
great.
Yeah, that applies to service as well. Yeah. It right. doesn't have to be painful.
It doesn't have to be painful.
And is your work hard, Thad?
No, honestly, no. It was intimidating and some stressfulness in there, but you know, you have a choice right then and there when you encounter that, which is like, I'm gonna let this stress put me down and, you know, put my tail between legs, or like, we're gonna embark on this and we're gonna, you know, rise above that challenge. So I had a fantastic time, and I've received like 30 messages today and
guilty.
Okay. Bunch of praise, and people had a great time.
You deserve it.
And another young person that had an opportunity to lead. All of those, everybody that spoke on that stage is older, has more experience, all of that other type of stuff. And that was led by Thad, who had an opportunity to experience that leadership. That's kind of what we're talking about, right? This big thing that happened in the community that might put us out there and give us access to a lot of different things was done by somebody who just knew that it needed to be done. And luckily, he had the support system and the courage to be able to do that.
Yeah. People are going to think I'm like 18 years old.
I mean, you're still
I'm 48.
Right? You're still pretty young.
My retirement plan is to hand this off to somebody else in 4 or 5 years.
Right, right.
That's my goal. But in
right.
reality,
you
though,
still won't be 30. So.
Yeah. In my reality, though, I do want to like hand this off to like somebody else or like really embrace the next energy of people because, yeah, it doesn't take anything to be on the organizing team or be a volunteer or be the support staff. Like, that can be a huge, like, that could be a helping group of, like, 30 or 50. So
sure.
It'd be terrific to see what we can do in future years.
All right. Plans for another?
I hope so. I got to renew the license and level up with Ted. So
okay,
to be determined.
To be determined.
I'm pretty confident.
We'll have you back on to talk about it when it happens.
I would love to.
All right. I want to thank all three of you for coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you.
And again, check out TEDx, and you can find within a week.
Yep, they'll be on the YouTube channels.
On the YouTube channels. You're listening to Innovation. I'm Kara Hedlund.